This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and two tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs and My Lotto rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up. The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
I don't want to embarrass her, but she once tried to come into our room with a butcher knife. We had locked her out because we were trying this other thing. The doctor said, why don't you lock your door and see what happens? And she decided that she was going to carve her way into the room.
I know that you are now my person because we have gone through the hard things.
Right.
And I'm still choosing you.
When you're in a slump, most couples think about how can I just step on the gas and get us together so we can have sex again. But instead, I want for you to think about what are all the things that are reinforcing your foot on the brake.
Hello, everybody. This is Humble and Hungry, and I'm your friend, Natalie Pouchet. Welcome back. First of all, I just want to say thank you guys so much for the outpour of love on last week's episodes. I appreciate all of you, and just thank you for your kind words. You know, I'm not going anywhere. Don't worry. I'm not going to stop podcasting. But I think it's so important to be vulnerable and honest and real because, you know, just the illusion that people are always great or always happy or, you know, just crushing it and hustling and whatever. It's like, it's such bullshit. I think sometimes people really do, just, you know, we're all going through, we all go through the same sort of ebbs and flows in life. And so I like to always be honest with you guys. And so when I'm having a rough time or a rough patch, I'm going to tell you guys, I'm not going to act like nothing's going on. So, I appreciate all of you guys just being there and, you know, going through it with me. So thank you for that. But moving right along, I have a very exciting, fun show for you guys today. I have expert relationship therapist, Laura Heck and Zach Brittle. And each of them individually are incredibly successful in their own right. They have been doing this for many, many years. So a little background, sorry, Andy, you can just cut that together. So a little background, Zach Brittle has been teaching, coaching, mentoring, and counseling couples for nearly 20 years. He's a licensed mental health counselor and specializes in evidence-based couples therapy based on over 40 years of marital research. He's also the founder and co-host of Marriage Therapy Radio. And creator of Your Marriage Masterclass and the author of the best-selling Relationship Guide, The Relationship Alphabet, and The Marriage Therapy Journal. And then his co-host is Laura Heck. And Laura is also, again, the co-host of Marriage Therapy Radio and host of the 7 Principles for Making Marriage Work workshop for couples. She coaches women through Epic Wives Experiment, speaks and trains for the Gottman Institute, and is a regular media expert on the topic of intimate relationships. She's a sex expert. And we are going to dive deep into relationships, marriage. You asked so many questions. I did a Q&A on Instagram. You guys asked a bunch of questions, and we are just going to dive straight into it. We have a lot of fun. It's probably one of my favorite episodes thus far. They're just super knowledgeable and sort of tell you how it is. They don't sugarcoat anything. So I hope you guys enjoy the episode. Please welcome my I'm so excited about these guests. Zach Brittle and Laura Heck. Hello.
How's it going?
Hi. Good. Good.
Thank you guys for being here. That's so funny. Yeah, we have no idea. I normally like to just kind of talk freely and not have anything planned. I feel like sometimes those are the best conversations. So I gave everyone sort of a highlight reel of what you guys do, that you guys have been married for 8 years. You guys are experts in your field. But can you guys give me a little bit more information on you guys?
We have been married for years, but not to each other.
Yes. No, not to each other. I know, separately. Yeah. Yes, I made that very, very clear.
Yeah. No.
It's a bit more like a brother-sister relationship. You might see that come out from time to time, although we're not really clear on who the older or younger sibling is.
It's okay.
Although Laura likes to remind me I'm much older.
So. Yes. Yes, by years.
As you should.
Mm-hmm. Professionally, we're both marriage and family therapists and sex therapists. And
I'm
what
not
else
a sex
are we
therapist.
Doing?
You're a sex
I
therapist.
I am. Yeah. That's right. You're an author, which I am not.
That's true.
So you're a really great writer. But I would say that's just such a small chunk of what we do. We're both parents. So I have, and I don't know, Natalie, if you have children, but I have an 8-year-old. Zach, you have
16 and
many,
20.
Many women in your life.
Yeah. I have two daughters, 16 and 20.
Nice. So you're surrounded by women.
Totally. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And there used to be this whole thing where my wife would say something to me like, oh, I feel like I have three children. And at this point, it's more like, I feel like I have three wives. Mm-hmm. So, and then
add, you lucky duck.
And then add Laura, who's like my work wife kind of. And yeah. So yes, I'm surrounded by the whole
Some bit. Men wouldn't be upset by that.
I get to practice a lot of my relational skill set. So
yeah.
I love it. I have a 3-year-old.
I feel like 3 is such a fun age because at that point, fingers crossed, they're potty trained. They can communicate. They're sleeping in their own bed, maybe.
Man, it's really hard.
Is it?
You're like, Laura, by the way, she's doing all of those things. But yet for me, I feel like this is, and I'm sure I'm going to look back and say, oh, I miss that age. But right now, I'm ready for the next phase.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
She's sassy and she's very opinionated and, you know, just honest and, you know, just a lot of probably me.
So I was like, those all sound like amazing qualities. Yeah. You're raising a sweet little girl.
Yeah. No, I'm sure she'll be great when she's, you know, in her 20s. But right now it's like, got to reel her in sometimes, you know?
I'm not sure though, man. Yeah. I got one that's 20. She didn't sleep through the night for 5 years. 5 years. Mm-hmm. And so, but she called us from college last night. It was 10 o'clock our time, which makes it midnight for her. And she was like, can you guys just talk me to sleep? Can you help me like fall asleep?
Aww.
And I was like,
Did you really?
So I don't know when they figured it out. We're still trying to figure it out. I'm almost 50 and, you know, so.
Did she come into your room and like sleep with you guys?
I have so many stories of her. I don't want to embarrass her, but she once tried to come into our room with a butcher knife. Like we had locked her out because we were trying this other thing. The doctor said, why don't you lock your door and see what happens? And she decided that she was going to carve her way into the room.
She is a smart, resourceful human being.
Wow.
Yeah. We were like, sorry, babe. Nope. This is not the solution that we're looking for.
So she went down to the kitchen, grabbed the knife.
Yep.
Hopefully was walking with the knife down and then made her way up. Yep. Oh my, wow.
Yeah. And we were like, it was like, it's crazy, but she's amazing. She's turned into a functional adult, but yeah, man, parenting is a trip. It's a road.
Which, and let me ask you guys. Okay. So just a little recap on me. So Riley is my fiance.
Okay.
And we did things backwards. You know, or just unconventional, if you will.
It's not unconventional anymore, though. That's the thing that I think is really interesting. Like, but I know what you mean. There's a show called Modern Family for a reason, right? Like,
right.
Anyway, go ahead.
But I got sort of reamed in, not reamed a new one, but you know, I think a lot of people looked at me like, okay, you know, she got knocked up, you know, and like, he proposed to me at the gender reveal, you know, so it's like things you don't really see normally. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. But my argument is that, and you guys can tell me if I'm totally wrong, but I feel like we've gotten through so many hardships and like the hardest part.
Right.
That now walking down the aisle, if we ever do that, I feel like I know that you are now my person because we've gone through the hard things,
right?
And I'm still choosing you because I think that sometimes, you know, when you go into a marriage sort of blindly, right? or at least you think you know the person, but you haven't had kids with them. You mm-hmm. haven't maybe bought a house together, like done like the really hard things.
Yeah.
And you're sort of just hopeful walking down the aisle. And I feel like, hey, maybe this should be the new norm. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah. You know, we've gotten through all the hard stuff and I still want to marry you.
Yeah.
At least I want to tell myself that.
Yeah. I just want to make sure I'm tracking. You did a gender reveal and he proposed and you have a 3-year-old now. So now you're about 3.5 years since he proposed, right around there.
Yep, exactly. So we've been together for 5 okay. and then, yeah, about 3 years, 3.5 years exactly of engagement. And then, you know, we want to get married. We talk about it, mm-hmm. but we're sort of not in a rush to, you know, walk down the aisle.
Yeah.
I was going to run down the aisle because we're thinking about having another baby and mm-hmm. I honestly don't want to be pregnant walking down mm-hmm. the aisle. So for us, it's like a, you know, it'll happen. We're ready for it when it happens. We're already pretty much playing house.
Yeah.
You know, we do everything together. We already call each other husband and wife, you know? Mm-hmm. And so for us, it's just a matter of when.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I mean, is that...
I have another follow-up question. This is the therapist in me because I'm kind of just getting really curious. What would be different, or what would you think differently, or how would you feel different if you had the ring on your finger and you had the marriage document signed? Like, what would be different if you were actually married?
I don't know. And that's where I feel like, I think it's like the outside pressures of people like, when are you going to get married?
Yeah.
When are you going to get married? But I also, and this probably goes back to like, I had, oh my gosh, you guys ready for this? My grandmother. So she was abducted by her husband when she was, I want to say like 12. Okay. She had polio in her legs and she would sit by the window and my grandfather would like walk by her house every day and really like they started to have this like weird relationship through the window. I don't know. And then one day he was leaving back to his little pueblo because he lived in Mexico and he was like, here, just, you know, walk me to the bus. And so he sort of like helped her walk to the bus and snatched her in the bus and literally there was like newspaper articles about, you know, missing young girl. Like he just straight snatched her. Okay. So, and he's Jewish, she's Catholic.
Okay.
So the whole ride to his little pueblo, he's like, you know, I love you and we're going to come back and I have a wedding dress waiting for you there. And everyone is excited to meet you and we're going to get married and promise her this like big wedding.
This is a Netflix special right here.
Oh my God. It's so crazy. So they get there and all of his he had like 8 brothers and sisters, you know, typical. And they all beat him up. And they're like, you brought another one home? Like, you know, yeah.
Grandpa. Like
needless to say, never had the white dress, the big wedding, never had that. Mm-hmm. And they had a really tumultuous relationship. You know, he would, you know, beat her up and they, but yet they were like each other's like love of their lives, mm-hmm. But never had the wedding.
Okay.
So before she died, she said that she wanted to be buried in a white wedding dress. So I don't know why I'm laughing now, but my mom and my sister go to David's bridal. So she passed away.
Okay.
So my mom and my sister go to David's bridal and they're looking for dresses. And the lady's like, oh, you know, like when's the wedding? And my mom and my sister start bawling and they're like, she's dead. And the lady was like, oh my God, I'm so sorry.
Take the dress never heard of anything for like free.
That. Yeah, exactly.
Oh my gosh.
So I feel like there's a lot of those stories in my family of the women never getting married. Mm-hmm. And
I was like, oh, that's what we're talking about.
Yeah, I know. Like, I had to bring it
like
back.
I'm like subscribing to Netflix. I'm like, wait a second. Where do I find the rest of this?
Yeah.
I know. So I have an aunt that never got married. And all the women on this side had really bad luck in marriage.
Okay.
Or like relationships, mm-hmm. not just marriage, obviously. Yeah. And so my mom is always like, well, you know, your aunt never got married and look at her now and look at so-and-so. I mean, granted, my mom also got a divorce and whatnot, but she feels like there's something that you're going to miss sort of at the end of your life that you didn't get to experience that with someone that you loved. And so I think she's constantly in my ear. Mm-hmm. And not that I don't want to walk down the aisle. I do want to have that moment. But, you know, going back to your question, will it change anything? I don't know if it will. I mean, I kind of hope that mm-hmm. it will because mm-hmm. I feel like I lost that whole, oh, we're fiancé and oh, we're doing things sort of the proper way, mm-hmm. right? Because I think you get to experience and enjoy certain moments.
Yeah.
So I feel like I lost a little bit of that. So I would like to have that moment of, you know, being able to say, okay, we are united and having maybe, you know, my daughter and a possible second there at the wedding and experiencing that.
Yeah.
I don't know. I went through 10 different stories yeah, there.
I love
this. This really is like therapy. Uh-huh. But yeah, so a part of me, yes, would like to have that so that, I don't know, maybe I can debunk and like not have what happened to the rest of the women in the family.
Sort of like kind of recreate the narrative or
Totally. Yeah.
Reestablish the legacy, because there's sort of this legacy, this trend that you are subscribing to. But what Zach, what you're saying is rewrite your story. Make something fresh and new for your daughter and for your future number two at some point. Are you pregnant right now?
I'm not. Okay. And I've been trying for like a year and a half and I can't get pregnant. So that's also part of like the, like, I don't want to start planning a wedding if I'm going to be pregnant. Mm-hmm. And so this whole lull of like trying to have a baby has sort of put like a weight on the whole thing. Mm-hmm. And I'm just sort of pushing it.
Okay.
Further and further away.
You're actually the person who taught me that you're not supposed to ask people if they're pregnant.
Well, it's part of the podcast. I mean, it's like Natalie's already shared like her number two is going to be wedding.
What did you just do? You just like,
I know.
I'm trying to manifest number two.
Well, here's the thing about, like I said, I'll be 50 this year. Rebecca and I, we just had our 25th anniversary.
And
so, you know, we were children when we got married. We were 23, 24. And at that point, that was how you became a grown up. Like when you were like, oh, okay, I guess I'm a child. And how do I do what's next? Well, you get married. And then the next thing you do is you have a baby and then you buy a house or whatever. And that's just not the way it is anymore. Now it seems like people sort of become grown ups.
They buy houses together.
And they buy houses and they start their families. And then they go, hey, maybe the way we can signal this to the world is say, and now we're going to be married and now we're going to make it official. And, you know, I think that I don't think that there's any sort of correct or right trajectory. It has changed a lot, at least in my culture in the last 25 years. But, I don't think it's, I think long-term committed relationships are long-term committed relationships. And some of them are marriages and some of them are engagements and some of them are abductions. And that is just kind of the way it goes.
I can't even handle that story. I really do think, have you not, like, there's not like a screenplay or something that's based off of
grandpa? No, there really isn't. But although there is, well, my mom, my mom's a hoot. You guys would love her. But she, the ex-CEO of Coca-Cola, who now she's doing a foundation with, wants to do a whole story on her life. Because she really does have a fascinating life. And that would include, her mother and father and everything that she went through as a child and how, you know, how she's come so far and whatnot. But it's crazy.
Wow.
It's absolutely crazy. Because what do you guys think about, like, you know, like the Kardashian curse? Mm. Have you guys heard of the Kardashian curse?
No, but it doesn't seem like there's much positive going.
So it apparently dates back to like their grandparents and whatnot, but the females have had, it's the men in the females' lives that apparently it always goes south for them.
Okay.
And they can never be successful. And it's sort of, it came out, I think, in one of the shows and one of the episodes that, you know, there really is a Kardashian curse because none of the women ever end up in successful relationships or the boyfriends, the husbands always end up going south.
They end up being Lamar Odom or Kanye West or something.
Exactly. Uh-huh. Yeah, exactly. Do you guys even believe in anything like that? Or do you think it just happens to be that there maybe are more powerful women? And what do you guys think about that?
Well, I mean, my brain goes immediately to the dynamic. Like, you have a system that is put in place of all these really strong women that are feeding off of each other, and it just continues to lift them up. So it makes a lot of sense. I mean, as far as like, is it a curse? Is it nurture where in that household they're all kind of feeding off of this dynamic? And then also they're pickers. Like, how are their pickers when they're picking their partners? Yeah. Like, maybe their pickers are broken. So as far as there being a curse, I mean, I don't believe in curses, but I certainly think that there's a really strong dynamic that you see playing out with all of those women. And boy, would it be really I mean, it would be really fascinating to be in a relationship with a Kardashian. Really interesting.
It's funny because I feel like, I mean, you know, but the men are becoming very successful in their own right. Mm-hmm. I mean, whether or not they succeed in what they want to do. I mean, they have now more eyeball. I mean, look at Pete Davidson, mm-hmm. right? Blew up after he was with Kim.
Right.
Even more, you know, even more than he did. So whether or not that's a curse.
Yeah.
I've done a little bit of work with clients like that who are in kind of the super duper high profile world. I think they just mm-hmm. live in a really, really different ecosystem. So when we start to talk about relationship reality, it's really challenging because they're not really in relationship. They're in public.
The bubble.
You know, they're in right. this bubble. And so, no, I don't believe in curses, but I do think that there's a thing that gets created both in the bubble and I think also in like normal people's lives that we do kind of carry the legacy of our families until somebody decides to break them, basically.
Did you see
it's kind of this whole notion, like you marry your mom or you marry your dad or like there's the sins of the father. I think all of that stuff does have a basis in actual sort of psychological trickle down through relational reality. But to have a conversation about the Kardashians, for example, it's almost like you have to sort of take it out of standard relationship conversation and put it within the context of actually, no, all of this is being done within a context that none of us have any understanding yep. of at all, you know? So it's hard to even understand how much of those, in that particular case, how many of those relationships are in fact relationships and versus like just business arrangements. Like I'm going to do a 9-month mm-hmm. stint here to accomplish this right. goal, da, 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 da. And so relationship isn't a part of it at all. Which is, I know it's messed up, but I don't mind saying this. I say it every single time, Laura.
I know Zach, has never heard Kim Kardashian's voice. And that is something that he, so when you started talking about the Kardashians, I was like, let me take this one, Zach.
3, 2, 1. No, it's a piece of trivia about me. I've never once heard Kim Kardashian's voice, although I'm getting anxious.
Do you want to hear her
voice? I mean, I don't feel strongly about it one way or the other. I just have noticed that it's never happened. Except now when you go on Hulu, they're like advertising the show.
And it just
and I'm terrified.
Comes up.
I'm like mute.
No, I don't want to hear it.
Because otherwise, it used to be Brene.
It is a very sweet, sensual.
It used to
voice
be Kim Kardashian and Brene Brown, and then Brene Brown like snuck up on me one time, and I was like, gosh. So
it.
Now it's just Kim.
Fascinating.
Yeah.
Laura, what were you going to say about the documentary?
Oh, I was just thinking about Prince Henry. Harry. Oh my gosh. Harry. Yeah. The documentary, either of you watched it on Netflix. Mm-hmm. You were talking about the bubble, but they were so intentional about being able to create their own bubble and date each other before they went out into the outside world, before everybody else had an influence on their relationship.
Yeah.
And I thought that was really lovely. I mean, you're just talking about my partner and I have done things backward, and I'm thinking about them doing things so intentional so that they have a chance to actually connect before they have the stressors of the outside influence on their relationship.
But, do you think that they're the real deal? Because I feel like they are.
Mm-hmm, I do. I really do. They've done a lot of really hard things together. Just kind of like what you were talking about is we did a lot of really hard things together from the get-go, whereas a lot of relationships have that ramp up. They're able to build their friendship and kind of deepen their intimacy over time. And slowly you introduce these things that make your relationship vulnerable. But if you're getting pregnant and you're having to introduce that to your network and you're going through and trying to figure out how do we do life with this like little baby, it speeds things up and you're overcoming those hurdles a lot quicker. I really do think they're the real deal. And I would love to read his book that just came out. It's all the rage with the Peloton moms right now.
Oh yeah. I've been hearing snippets.
Yeah. I don't know anything about Harry and Meghan apart from what I can kind of glance on the periphery. I barely watched The Crown, but one thing that Laura and I just were talking, we were recording before we talked to you, and we're talking about how couples can or should or need to make a transition. And part of what I would argue a lot, particularly if they come into therapy, is you got to put a stake in the ground. You got to put a stake in the ground and say, from this point on, we're doing this. Like we've done A, we've done B, we've done C. Now this is D. And that seems like something they have done very deliberately, right? I mean, they literally left behind particularly for him, an entire identity culture in order to say, nope, my relationship is the thing. So I don't know if they're the real deal or not, but I do know that it came at a, that for them to become Harry and Meghan, it came at a very, very high cost, which looked like them saying, nope, stake in the ground. And so good for them. I mean, I can imagine they're doing a lot of things right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think he also doesn't want to see, you know, history repeating itself, right? With all the press and everything. And now he has kids. So that's another reason why he's going to be, you know, sort of like a papa bear and want to protect his family. And I don't see that relationship, like him ever resenting her for, you know, leaving the family the way that he did.
Yeah.
I feel like he's definitely made the choices on his own, which I think resentment, that's a question I want to ask you guys. Mm-hmm. How do you get over it, whether it's, you know, Prince Harry or just regular Joe Schmo, like, how do you move past any sort of resentment in a relationship?
Can I have this one?
Yes. Are you going to talk about the Zygarnik effect? I would love for you to talk about that.
I will, but I wasn't eventually. Going to.
Okay.
Okay. We'll get that to then after that. I
have come to understand resentment a lot lately. I got sober about 2.5 years ago. And when you do that, particularly through AA, you have this kind of revisiting your own relationship with resentment. And, you know, cause alcohol is its own thing or whatever, but like at the core of it, something's going on. And if you really dive into the sort of the recovery thing, you have to face this notion of resentment. And I love talking about it because for me, the biggest part of coming to understand that process was grappling with exactly that. And I think to answer your question very specifically, if you are a person who has resentment, you absolutely must take responsibility for that yourself. Like it just has to be something that you decide, I'm going to decide that I have responsibility here. So even if it's people who have harmed you, to be able to say, I know that I was part of the setup. I know that my personality contributed to this. I know that I may have made choices that made it easy for you to harm me. Not to say you're off the hook, but to take responsibility and kind of seize the power for yourself so that you're not dependent on the other person needing to apologize or change their behavior or course correct on your behalf. Like you just can't rely on other people to do that. And so if you're a person who's very comfortable with resentment, then my easy go-to answer, particularly over the last, you know, few years has been, you got to turn it inside, look inside and go, what's my part of this? It's just the most liberating. It's just the most liberating approach because otherwise you have to do all this other work, which to Lara's point about the Zygarnik effect includes this participation effort. You just can't, I don't know, man, you just, if you're not willing to show up like kind of open to the possibility that repair is there, then I don't know how you can expect it to happen.
It's a really good point that you're talking about, because if you're holding resentment for someone that is no longer here, right? Like you're holding resentment for a father who's passed away and you're carrying that baggage with you. There's no participation that you can have or expect with that person to be able to free yourself from that resentment that you have. And even if the responsibility taking that you're taking, Zach, is let's say you have resentment for, you know, childhood wounds that happened when you were a child, right? Like abuse or an emotional, physical, or neglect. What is the responsibility taking that you need to have in order to purge yourself of that resentment that is weighing you down? It's kind of a hard question to take, which means that sometimes the responsibility that you're taking for yourself might be, I was a child and I carried that pain, and having some grace for yourself and doing some of that childhood wound work. So
does that mean that you're forgiving that person? You're forgiving yourself? I mean, is there forgiveness here, or is it more just of a, like, what is that? Like, dive a little deeper.
Yeah, I think that it's a lot of forgiveness for yourself. And when you're able to have grace for yourself, have some compassion, hold yourself. So let me back up just a little bit. What Zach was talking about with the Zygarnik effect is, if you have a partner that is still present, maybe it's, I have resentment with my lover, or Natalie, you have resentment for your partner and you want to talk about it. the Zeigarnik effect is being able to go back and say, I really need to share what's going on for me with you, and I need you to be present for my pain and hear what my experience was. And when your partner is able to hear your pain and show up with for you, hear it, validate it, show some compassion, it allows you to go through and actually kind of release that so that you don't continue to trip on it over and over and over. That's what resentment ends up being, is I'm carrying it and I'm holding it. And so it just releases it. But that's only if you have a partner that's willing to show up for you in that way. And so you're hoping that they have compassion for you. Now, if that partner isn't there, it's your dad who's passed on, or it's someone you'll never, ever speak to that's harmed you in some way, then I think the compassion needs to come from within. And that can help to release that resentment for the other person because you're holding yourself with compassion and empathy.
Right.
I think it's really, really hard to put this in a super simple form. But there's a big difference. There's a discernible difference between feeling resentment and feeling pain. And what I was talking about before is that resentment is a piece of like, it's kind of that thing about like, resentment is like drinking poison and expecting the other person to die. It's sort of like that notion. And that's the part I'm talking about, is don't drink the poison. Don't feed the resentment piece. That doesn't mean don't address the pain, or don't grapple with the trauma, or don't dive into forgiveness. Like, those are different parts, because your dead father who wounded you, you can resent him all day long until you decide that, no, I'm actually going to release that part. But then you can go, but man, I have real trauma that is affecting my real relationships right now in real time. And that needs attention and energy. He just doesn't get it. He doesn't get it. So that's the part that I think is, again, it's hard to put that in like a super simple way, but I would never want to say to somebody, hey, just get over it. That's not at all what I'm talking about. I'm talking about like, don't give yourself the disadvantage of resentment, while dealing with the thing that is really important, which is, I'm trying to be a better husband, father, person, employee, friend. And this thing that I have with my dad is in the way. So now what do I do? You know?
Yeah. So powerful. Because I think a lot of people do struggle with that. And I think that it does end up affecting their relationships, and it can cause so, you know, so much sort of distress in a relationship.
Yeah.
And until you get sort of to the root of it, and like you said, go through and do all the things that you guys are saying, I think I just think it's so important for people to really hear that. Mm-hmm. So, it's a brand new year, and EveryPlate is here to help you achieve all of your resolutions. EveryPlate helps you save money with delicious, affordable recipes delivered to your door. Plus, if you're looking to cook more, EveryPlate helps you expand your cooking skills with easy-to-follow recipes that you can help whip up in just 6 simple steps. It's going to be a great year with EveryPlate. Saving money is, I think, on top of everyone's mind right now. And EveryPlate is actually 25% cheaper than grocery shopping. Can you believe that? This means that you can put the money you save on groceries towards new fun resolutions. Plus, they have the newest meal preference, which is called Nutrish and Delish, featuring around 650 calories or less. Each wholesome, satisfying dish helps you stay on track with your goals without all the guesswork. And you can leave the calorie counting to us and dig into delicious lettuce wraps, rice bowls, and more. And let me tell you, I have done this. I've done it with Piper sitting on the counter, helping me chop up some veggies and do all the things. But the Nutrition Delish is my favorite. It's all so good. It's helping me stay on track. It's helping me keep everyone else in my family on track. And I'm telling you, it's fast and easy. Get $1.39 per meal by going to everyplate.com/podcast and entering the code HUMBLE139. So get started with EveryPlate for just $1.39 per meal by going to everyplate.com/podcast and entering the code HUMBLE139. That's up to $134 value. You're welcome. Okay, I have a lot of questions from Instagram.
Okay.
We can sort of rapid fire this. You guys can take one each. Here we go. Well, let me see.
I'm like ready to bid. Yeah. Paddle up. I want that one.
The what?
I'm ready to bid on which one I want first.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, here we go. Okay, when is it time to walk away? And how do you know that it's over? These are two different people, but sort of the same question.
Well, walk away from an argument or walk away from the relationship?
How do you know when it's over? Let's just say that.
Okay. There's a clinical answer.
Yeah.
The clinical answer is when the friendship system is broken and and dead, basically.
Ooh.
That's when you walk away. And there are because the friendship is at the bottom of any healthy relationship. It is the basis.
The foundation.
And so when that is broken, then and that includes things like trust and commitment and you can measure that clinically. There's an instrument that we can kind of go, hey, you scored a 6 out of 10 or whatever. And but that also most people aren't operating clinically. They're operating on their gut and their feel and their sense of what's going on. So but yeah, I think when my clinical baseline answer is around the quality of the friendship and whether or not that is has any like heartbeat left.
Yeah, that makes so much sense. Okay, what to do when you are no longer physically attracted to your significant other?
Okay,
I'll let the sex therapist take that one.
I mean, we get a lot of that. A lot of partners stop being physically attracted to one another, and it's just this evolution that has occurred. I mean, our bodies change, we physically change, we lose our hair, we put on 50 pounds, a lot happens. And so what I think is that we have to be very intentional about mentally rehearsing the qualities that we love and adore about our partner so that we are in a place of adoration and appreciation for things that go beyond just the physical attributes. Another thing that I think about too is being really aware of the images that you're choosing to look at. So just as an example, you know, I might have a partner who is 280 pounds, 5'8", and yet the images that I choose to elicit energy and excitement and that I really focus on might be 6'3", 180 pounds. And so I'm focused on that, but my partner looks like this. And I think that if you can find a way to meld the two of those and find ways to adore other things about your partner's characteristics physically, it might have a helpful way of sort of eliciting a little bit more, I don't know, joy, excitement, attraction. I don't know if that makes sense.
And what happens though if you know, at the beginning of the relationship, you guys were both working out and you guys were, you know, had the same interests and eating healthy. And all of a sudden, you know, as people change and things change and all of a sudden now maybe one isn't so active and one doesn't like doing those things. I mean, is there any hope there? If it's like, wait, we used to love doing these things together. Now you don't. Like we have nothing in common.
I think there's always hope. Because what Laura said there, what she started with, and you sort of tucked it in there, but it's here's the thing. It's going to happen.
Right.
You're
right.
Going to become less attracted to your partner.
Yes.
Or your partner's going to become less attractive.
Shit.
I mean, it just is. It's going to happen because you signed up for X and then time happened.
That's right.
Yeah.
And so X became X by 10% or X by 20% or X by 30 or whatever.
Right.
Or you had a car accident or you had a baby or you had, or you felt like you got injured and you couldn't go back to the gym. Like it's
or your partner didn't change at all, but your attraction to something else evolved and changed. I get people that say, I was never attracted to women and now I'm in a relationship with a man and I'm deeply attracted to women. What do I do now?
Yeah.
Like you change. And so both of you are always evolving and changing.
So I think the question is flawed. What happens if you become less physically attracted to your partner? Well, then you have to find other like locus of attraction, you know, it's in who you are, not what you execute toward me with my eyeballs.
It's funny when I met my fiance, I was not attracted to him at all in the beginning.
That's hot.
And and so I was in another relationship and my boss was like, you got to meet him. And I was like, I don't know. He's just not really my type. And and then, you know, I broke up with my boyfriend and I was like, okay, fine. I'll go on a date. And even the date was like, I don't know. He was like a little awkward to talk to and he's a genius in his specialty. And so it makes him a little awkward and socially awkward. So I was like, I really just don't
And then he threw you on the bus
and took you back home to his brothers and was like,
So it really took me time to fall for him. Mm-hmm. And so I eventually fell so, you know, head over heels with like his heart and
I love that for you,
you know, his mind mm-hmm. and his intellect. And I was like, this is exactly what I've wanted.
Right. And
it's funny because, you know, the whole manifesting thing and what you want, and you got to put out there. I never once wrote what I wanted him to look like. Mm. I never even said I wanted him to be funny, which he's really not funny at all. I really wanted him to be just like, you know, loyal and smart. And I wanted to have intellectual conversations mm-hmm. And just be like soulfully connected. And we are. But I think to this person's point, like, and to your guys' point, I grew to fall in love with him and his heart
right.
and his mind.
Yeah.
And everything, and then I found him more attractive. Mm-hmm. And then I was like, okay, I could do this, you mm-hmm. know. And now I feel like I'm more attracted to him now than ever. And I feel like men also age better than women. So there's that. He's also,
they do.
You know,
there's an interesting thing too that happens with hormones over time, where people feel very sexually drawn toward one another, and that's just something that happens within sort of this limerence phase of, I want to be with you, I want to collaborate my body with your body, I want to make babies with you. And there's a lot happening that doesn't happen later on in relationships, and it feels like we've lost attraction to our partner when we just don't have the same dosage of these chemicals and hormones going through our body. But I think what you said is, Zach, the same thing is, find things that you adore about your partner that is a part of who they are as a human being that is likely unchanging. And while both of your features are going to change, your bodies are going to change, I think it's okay to just sort of be like, that kind of is a bummer. I mean, there are things that I wish that you were a 6'5" lumberjack, but you're not. You're, right. you know, a desk jockey, and that's just fine.
So this sort of leads me to the next one. It's, what do you do? What to do when in the biggest sexy time slump and feel like you can't get out of it? So yeah, I think just like the sex question mm-hmm. of when one wants it more than the other, or maybe you guys both don't want it. How do you get over that? I mean, is there things that you can take? I mean, are there supplements? Are there like, is there a magic pill? Like mm-hmm. that's not Viagra.
Do you want me to take that one, Zach?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, the only thing I would say is, Lauren, if you haven't made this clear yet, Lauren and I have a podcast. It's called Marriage Therapy Radio. And we did
good plug.
Well, we just finished January. We did three interviews with people who are answering this question on a daily basis. Like, mm-hmm. so there's that. So like, go listen to those, but also like Laura is super duper smart and, has got a lot of insight into this space. Let me just say this way. I'm certainly not trying to plug, but I learned so much about this in the last mm-hmm. month mm-hmm. that mm-hmm. that's where like, I almost don't have an answer because I need to go back and kind of go, wait, what did they say? And how did that work? And what is it? You know, so, but Laura, go for it.
Okay. So what you just asked is there a pill? Is there something that we can do? Because when you're in a slump, often most people think we need the accelerator. We need to put some gas on this, light it on fire. We need to find a way to just sort of like get kinky, get the red room, get all the candles, all of that. So I want you to imagine that you have like this dual control model. So you have a gas pedal and you have a brake pedal. And when you're in a slump, most couples think about, how can I just step on the gas and get us together so we can have sex again? But instead, I want for you to think about, what are all the things that are reinforcing your foot on the brake? So there's a ton of things that actually reduce the amount of just what you would feel sexy. And it can be stress. It can be the kids on the other side of the wall. It could be the fact that like you put on 10 pounds and you don't feel sexy. It's all the things that are the brake pedals. And if you can think about a car, if one of you has your foot on a brake pedal, it doesn't matter how much you put your foot on the gas, you're not going anywhere. So instead, think about, what are all the things that have been reinforcing the brake pedal in our relationship? It could be relational issues. It could be physical. It could be emotional. It could be spiritual. A lot of things that are reinforcing the brake pedal. So take your foot off the brake pedal and things will flow naturally.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So you really have to do the work. to like.
Sex does like, not happen.
Just everything in life.
I felt
you know?
Empathy for the question because I was like, oh, wouldn't it be great if there was just like a pill that fixed
wouldn't
all this?
It?
But it is relational work. Like that's just kind of the deal.
Yeah.
So scientifically, it's not like, I mean, for women, can it be that you have like very low or like testosterone for men, right?
Sure.
Like they have really low, like a low sex drive. Mm-hmm. So they're working out, they're eating health, they're doing all the things, but they have, you know, a low sex drive. Mm-hmm. I mean, is that something that you have to go to the doctor for, or is that still something that you have to like maybe lower your stress and
maybe both?
What do you do?
Maybe both. I mean, there are in fact biological factors that are a part of this whole bit. But most of the work that Laura and I do is about cracking the relational piece of it, you know?
Yeah.
Which is a small piece of the puzzle. I have a lot of first responders where, you know, the wives are like, I've done everything. I'm so sexy. I wear the underwear and I watch porn with my husband and all of this, and he doesn't want me. And it's like, well, your husband just came off of a shift where his cortisol levels were through the roof, which reduces his T levels. And all he wants to do is come home and sleep. And you're trying to like, why don't you want me? So if there's
and by the
lot
way, he might have
factors.
Just seen some people die.
Yes.
And,
yes.
You know, right. Like, so it's context, right? It's all context dependent.
That is, yes, absolutely.
And I will say, because for me, it was, we have that here. He's an executive chef, partner, you know, he develops hotels and whatnot. So he's always on his feet.
Right.
He's always dealing with people.
High stress.
Very high stress. Yeah. But then a part of me, and this is like where, you know, once you're together, he's like, I'm just tired or I'm, you know, I had a stressful day. But it's like when you're dating, what's the difference? Because when you're dating, they're hot and heavy all the time because it's still new, it's exciting.
Yeah, and they know it's coming.
They still did the same 16-hour shift, and then you know you go on a date and it's exciting. So it's like I think for sometimes you revert back to like, well, you weren't doing that when we were dating.
Yeah.
Why are you doing that now?
Mm-hmm. Because
is it just like the comfort level? And it's like
no, because you knew that you were going to have a date. Like he went to work Friday morning thinking I'm gonna have a date with Natalie tonight, and both of you were gonna have a date, we're gonna have a date. So all day, whether you're consciously thinking it or not, you're mentally preparing and rehearsing and getting yourself ready because you know that you guys are gonna see each other, you're gonna have sex, whatever it might be. You turn the crock pot on. I love that. That's like he's a chef, and so you turn the crock pot on in the
probably
morning.
He uses
and
crock pots all the time
all the time. Yeah, you know.
Yeah.
Go to.
But when you're married, you just come home and you're just like, you roll over and is this happening?
Yeah.
That's the lead up. You had 30 seconds of your partner initiating sex and you're like, I haven't even thought about it for the last 6 weeks. I have no idea.
Right.
Yeah.
So I wonder if when you're married, that's when they say like, you know, still go on dates and whatnot. Maybe it's just, it's planning those dates
100%.
And planning those.
Yeah.
Those spontaneous moments of like, hey, let's get together for a drink.
The other thing I would say too, and this is like, you can trim this if you want, of course you can, but like sex is a really weird thing because we have to figure out like, what is it for? Like when you're first getting to know somebody, sex is for fun. It's for recreation and exercise.
Yeah.
Then you're together and you're doing the stuff and you like, then you're like, let's have a baby. And sex is for this other thing. And then, you know who sex is really hard for. It's people who are trying to get pregnant and can't. And so they're I'm ovulating. Let's go, let's go, let's go, let's go, let's go. You know, let's do this. And so sex is no longer recreational or enjoyable. It's actually like a task. And so what happens is sex itself changes and we have to be on the same page about what is this for? And is it for fun? Is it for connection? Is it for pleasure? Is it for her pleasure? Is it for his pleasure? Is it for ours? Is like, that's a conversation that needs to happen in part because if it doesn't happen and you're just like kind of banking on, well, why isn't it the way it used to be? Well, the reason it's not the way it used to be is because the context has changed, you know? And so it's becoming it's a different thing. And so let's make sure we steward that thing in a way that's important to both of us.
Do men... Normally, you're definitely not like the norm, but like, do men want to have those conversations or are they going to look at you like, oh God, here she goes, wants to talk or wants to communicate. Like, why are we talking about sex? Let's just have sex.
I would put it this way.
Or what's there to talk about?
Like, I would say they do. They just don't know that they do. You know?
Yeah. Like, if the end result was that you were going to have more better sex, then I think everybody would talk about it. If the end result was having the conversation.
And so maybe the first hurdle is reminding them or helping them understand that they do actually want to have this conversation, because
right.
not having it certainly. And listen, these days, like men, what is that? Women, what is that?
Yeah.
Like that, that's so hard to kind of put in a, because I know plenty of men who have lower libido than their women, than their wives or whatever. And of course there's same sex and all this other, and the way it, blah, 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 like we could go on that forever. So I don't want to give an answer that's like, yeah, men are like this, but I think people need help understanding that the way to get what they want is to articulate what they want and to, and to have a give and take around that thing so that they can negotiate terms.
Right. Okay. And let's wrap it with this.
Okay.
Okay, so if you guys, typical question is what makes a successful marriage? In a very short answer, what to you individually, you guys can answer separately, but like what to you, if there's, you know, anything you would tell your younger self, your kids, what makes a successful marriage?
Okay. I have mine.
Okay. I mean, okay. Go for it. I think we have probably very similar answers. Yeah.
Yeah. So Zach and I were both trained similarly through the Gottman Institute. And so we kind of have it indoctrinated in, but you said, what do you think? And something that I have been really focused on, which is a bit of a principle that we find in research, is that a successful marriage is when you can lay your head down on your pillow every single night and you can ask your partner, did you do everything today that you wanted to do to accomplish what you're here to do on this planet? Basically like your life vision, your life purpose. And if I can, as my husband's wife, say I did everything I could to support your vision, like your goal of what it means to be a person, then I think I've done everything that I can. Because I want to be in partnership with someone who is so conscious of my own purpose, goal on this planet, that they are also helping me to achieve my own dreams and I'm achieving, helping them to achieve their dreams. That's what I think a successful partnership is on that deeper level.
I love that.
Yeah.
I love that.
And I would say that's part three of what makes a successful marriage. And the first one we've already talked about today, which is that you like successful partners are proactive about nurturing the friendship. They are interested in, and they remain committed to like the fundamental regard and respect that just is at the core of any healthy relationship. Then the other one that's kind of important and we could do a whole other episode on this is, it's are they successful at managing difference? And some people want to say managing conflict, but it's really difference. Like not all difference is conflict, but couples that are successful are really good at navigating difference. And sometimes it's as different as do you want to have, you know, chicken or fish tonight? And sometimes it's as significant as do you want another baby or not? Do you want to be monogamous or not? Do you want to live in California or Texas? Like those things can be, but so couples that are successful, they have a really strong friendship. They're good at managing conflict or difference, and they are participants in one another's dream as they try to kind of move through life together.
Mm-hmm. Oh my God. That's so good. It's just so, and it's funny because it's so simple.
It is.
Right? You think it's so simple, but then when you're actually in the day-to-day minutia of life, it feels harder, right? But it's, when you step back, it's like, yeah, that makes so much sense.
Yeah.
Have you ever been at that? Have you been at a wedding and the people are dancing and they're like, okay, if you've been married less than 5 years, sit down. If you've been married less than 10 years, sit down. And then there's one couple left. And we all clap for them and we say, oh gosh, you guys are so heroic. And then, but if you ask them, what do they do? They will talk to you about how they're each other's best friend and they let a lot of stuff slide off their back and they just kind of stayed, they've stayed the course, you know? So that's, I mean, the proof's just kind of there at the wedding that you haven't had yet, but you should do that at your wedding and then ask them, you know, when you have it, and that'll.
Well, my grandmother couldn't tell her story at my wedding.
Don't give granny the mic.
Exactly.
Grandma.
Wait, I do have one last question. Do you think people can be alone?
Oh, alone.
Alone, alone.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We find all sorts of ways to outsource our needs. And I think that there is a whole lot of ways to outsource what we would think we are going to get from an intimate relationship among a sea of people. And in fact, I think the healthiest relationships do outsource a lot of their needs to other people. It takes a tribe.
You're talking about people like, can people be single and happy? Is that what you mean?
Yeah. Like single. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Single, alone, and not have like that other person, just like on a, I don't know, like on an energy level, like on a, all of it.
I mean, I think functionally as people on the planet, we need to be in relationship with people, but I don't think you need a single partner that you're going to like, that's going to like guarantee your happiness for the rest of your life or something like,
Well, if anything, we recognize we have a tendency toward being serial monogamous. The longer that we live, we notice that we kind of go through multiple relationships through time. But monogamous, meaning one other partner, we do have a tendency to do that. But could we be happy and successful and thrive as individuals if we're by ourselves? I absolutely think so.
Yeah,
I think 100%. As long as we have a pack, we have people that we feel intimately connected to on this planet, we can succeed.
Hmm. Love that. And right now, did you guys hear Miley Cyrus's new song?
No.
Flowers.
I love Miley though.
So good. She basically is saying, I can buy my own flowers. I can talk to myself for hours. Mm-hmm. I can hold my own hand. I can do all these things. And it's a very much like, I can do it by myself better than you can.
Mm-hmm.
Like I can be with myself better than it. The whole, it, the, such a great song.
Yeah.
It's like been on repeat forever, but I was like, oh my God, I'm like screw you, Riley. I can be by myself.
Poor Riley.
I know. Thank you guys so much for being here.
Of course.
I appreciate you guys so much. Yeah. Please let everybody know where they can find you, where they can listen to your show, all the things.
Yeah. So you can find our website, marriagetherapyradio.com. That's where you'll find out about our upcoming workshop where we talk all about those three dimensions that we were talking about, the friendship, managing conflict, and life dreams. And then Zach loves the Instagram. So if you want to hang out with Zach on the gram, you can find Marriage Therapy Radio there.
I just want a blue check. I'm just like, that's all I want. I
don't even
care.
Tell me about it.
Follow us on the Instagram. It's at Marriage Therapy Radio. Yeah. MarriageTherapyRadio.com. We do have a workshop coming up in March,
March 3rd and
then
4th.
Later in the summer and fall. Yeah. And then we have episodes that drop every week. And January was awesome. We had a lot of very cool conversations with people who make me smarter. So hopefully you get smarter. Yeah.
I love that. All right, everybody, go check them out. Thank you guys so much. And I hope you guys can come back and we can do a lot more of this,
anytime,
this year.
Yeah, please. Love to.
All right. Bye, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you all so much for tuning in. I hope that you guys gained some pearls there. I know I did. A few aha moments of like, right, yes, so simple. So simple. But yet so hard sometimes, right? But maybe we're just making it harder than what it should be. But definitely go check them out. I also want to mention that after we finished recording, Zach and Laura wanted to offer my Humble and Hungry listeners a discount for their spring workshop. So it is the 7 principles for making marriage work. There is all this information. I'm going to post it on Instagram if you're interested, or DM me. It is March 3rd and 4th, but they are giving my listeners a discount, and it is code HAND, HANDH. That's exclusively for our listeners, and you're going to get a major discount. It's normally $450, and they're going to give it to us for $397. So make sure you guys go and snag a spot there. Again, I'm going to post it on Instagram, but if you guys want that link, just DM me. Or if you want to reach out to them and let them know that you're a Humble and Hungry listener as well, you guys can and do that. But go snag a spot. I think it's so important. It's so good to just constantly learn and become better humans. Go follow them on Instagram. They're so great. So thank you guys for coming on. And thank you all at home for listening. And remember, 5-star reviews will always help me. I'll click the little 5-star down in the Apple box. And I will see you all next week. Thank you all so much. Remember, stay humble and stay hungry.